guys, what's up? Tom Dunn here from Through the Black.
I later found out about this, what they called the Greek computer. And yes. I'm probably going to butcher the name, but it's Antitherium mechanism. Is that correct?
Well, I think it's hard to pronounce the Antikytheria mechanism.
Yeah.
It's really interesting. I don't know if it's exactly out of place because we know it was human made. It was found in the wreck of a ship in about 1900. But it's so interesting because it shows a level of technology that didn't exist again after that period for 1500 years. In other words, nobody could make gears and an object as precise as this until much later. So it's the first real kind of computer that was created in the world. And it was designed to show the positions of planets. And in fact, a lot of scientists have spent a huge amount of time reconstructing this mechanism from the corroded and partial remains of the mechanism. It shows a lot of intelligent thought that was put into this design, and so it makes you wonder what type of technology existed back with the ancient Greeks 2,000 years ago that we still don't know about.
All things continually lead back to serpents, dragons, fairies, Nephilim, and fallen angels.
In the distance looms a mystical mountain.
As Mike Heiser used to say, if it's in the Bible and it's weird, it's probably important.
At its peak, a great fire burns, concealing the Prometheus lens.
This development of this knowledge that's being talked about within the mystery schools.
An ancient artifact said to reveal the hidden truth within a deliberately darkened world.
There is a hidden history that's been deliberately obfuscated from the peoples of the world.
Join us as we travel and explore the vast unknown. It's a hero's journey with dragons to slay, damsels to save, and innumerable treasures to hoard. Torches high.
The Smithsonian, they'd caught wind of a giant skeleton. They would send their agents out to get it.
But it takes courage to move forward, to move out of the shadows, out of the unreality that we think of as reality.
We are all on the hero's journey.
Mankind has been in contact with and influenced by extraterrestrials.
Leave the Sitchin mound of bull feathers out of it.
You know, look at it from a different perspective. A different perspective. Different perspective.
But what's happening and what's up? Hold out your glass, because we're about to fill it up. Welcome to the Prometheus Lens Podcast, the place where the conversations are always enlightening. I'm your host, Justin. Here, we like to use the allegory of the Prometheus Lens to take a second look at everything. Well, today, we're going to explore a topic that's always been a fascination of mine, because when I look back through history, I know that we don't have all the puzzle pieces, and there's so many missing pieces that we have to ask these questions and look at these things, and we find all of these out-of-place artifacts. Well, I'm always looking around on Amazon for different reading material and different things to deep dive into, and I discovered this thing called the Encyclopedia of Out-of-Place Artifacts. And I was like, well, this looks interesting. So then I got to looking, and this guy's written like over 150 books, and all the topics are on the things that I'm into. It's giants, it's out-of-place artifacts, it's ancient civilizations, UFOs. So I immediately just started, I went into research mode, detective mode. I got to looking on Facebook and Googling, trying to find this guy, and reached out to him, and he was nice enough to sit down and talk with us today about his book, Out-of-Place Artifacts. So I'd like to introduce to the show today, Martin Eddington. Martin, thank you for sitting down and talking with us today.
Thank you, Justin. Looking forward to this.
Oh, yeah, I have too, man. You got so much material to go through. We'll just, as long as you're willing to talk, I'm willing to sit down and listen. But for all of our listeners that's not familiar with your work, just give us a synopsis of who you are, your interests, and just give us a feel for who you are.
Sure. I'm a retired engineer, spent my career in business in Fortune 1000 companies. And I've had a kind of a two-track life. On one side was my business and technical background, and the other is my interest in the spiritual and paranormal. And when I was 19, I was taught to meditate by a middle-aged psychic physicist, Sam Lentine, who's no longer with us, but he taught me how to get into all of these spiritual modes. So my fascination with writing about things is based on my interest in all these topics, and I try to give them a slant from a technical perspective. So a lot of my experiences, for instance, with paranormal prophecy and premonitions, I look at analytically as to how these things can exist. So my books are an outgrowth of my interest in the unusual and out-of-the-box topics. My website is mketingtonbooks.com. That's spelled mketingtonbooks.com. And I have on the homepage buttons for all the different categories of books that I have. And it's interesting because we'll talk about it more, but a lot of these topics seem to be interrelated the more you get into them. It's very interesting. So that's how I got into this. I've been doing it about 15 years now, and I'm looking forward to our talk today.
Oh, definitely. And that's something I always say is that the more I deep dive and look into these things, that they are, they're all interconnected. But right. I guess like my first like experience or knowledge of what we call an out of place artifact was the real familiar ones, you know, and some of them I'm not familiar with the names, but of course, you know, the hammer that was stuck in the rock, mm-hmm. you know, that was one that I'd heard about. And then I later found out about this, what they called the Greek computer, and yes. I'm probably going to butcher the name, but it's Antitherium mechanism. Is that correct?
Well, I think it's hard to pronounce the Antikytheria mechanism.
Yeah.
It's really interesting. I don't know if it's exactly out of place because we know it was human made. It was found in the wreck of a ship in about 1900. But it's so interesting because it shows a level of technology that didn't exist again after that period for 1500 years. In other words, nobody could make gears and an object as precise as this until much later. So it's the first real kind of computer that was created in the world. And it was designed to show the positions of planets. And in fact, a lot of scientists have spent a huge amount of time reconstructing this mechanism from the corroded and partial remains of the mechanism. It shows intelligent thought that was put into this design. And so it makes you wonder what type of technology existed back with the ancient Greeks 2000 years ago that we still don't know about. There might be a lot of things that they had in technology back then that we're just not aware of today. So this is a good example of an outlier. And I guess it falls in the category of an OOPA because it is so out of place with what is normally expected. But now, of course, science is catching up to that and changing the textbooks to say, well, something like this was built back in the time of the ancient Greeks.
And see, with things like this, too, it does. They rewrites history because we're told that, you know, as time progressed, we've gotten smarter. We've learned to build and do all these different things. And then when we find these, it just totally changes the paradigm because the current paradigm when I was growing up, it was the ancients were dummies. They were knuckle draggers. And mm-hmm. when we find these things, it's like some of this technology we're just now starting to rediscover. And some of these megalithic sites, you know, our modern heavy machinery would have a really hard time if we could at all reconstruct them. And
yeah, another ancient technology, which is interesting, is it was recently discovered that the writing on some Babylonian cuneiform tablets really was a new form of trigonometry, a type of mathematics, which a lot of people learn in high school. But nobody thought that people thousands of years ago, because Babylonian goes back to several thousand years BC, had an understanding of mathematics at this level. So I think there's a lot of undiscovered or lost technology for many earlier human civilizations.
Oh, and I agree. You know, I remember one thing that stands out in my mind was, you know, in the Book of Solomon, you know, where he said that nothing new is under the sun. We will marvel and say we have discovered or created this new thing, but no, it is something that has been lost and now being rediscovered.
Right.
And especially this, because I'm really into, you know, looking at the stars and astronomy and stuff. So things like this really show you that they were mapping these things and looking to these things for a long time. And you can go back and even into the myths, as far as, you know, astronomy and stuff goes, you see constantly the numbers of 70, 72, the degrees of precession, the great year cycles, just, you know, all these different things that these guys were, they had the knowledge, you know, that we're just now just wrapping our heads around. I think it's just fascinating.
Yep, it is.
Well, I guess move on. This is, as you guys can see, I pulled up a picture from his book. He sent me a PDF file to show you guys some of the things that we're talking about here. He's going to go through a few of these for you guys and give you a sample. But the next one you wanted to talk about, you want to look at the Baghdad battery. Now, that was another one.
Right.
That was really fascinating for me.
Now, of course, we think electricity is a modern invention. That it was discovered in the late 18th century, and it wasn't until the 19th century that generators were made and people really started to understand electricity. But here we have an actual battery that was made 2,000 years ago, and it has an anode and a cathode, and they're not sure what it was used for. It might have been used to electroplate things, which is something you can do with batteries to cause ions to flow from one anode to cathode and, like, add a gold covering to things using this technique. But we are taught that nobody had that technology until the last couple hundred years. So this is another exception to the rule, and it's not mysterious what it does, but maybe they were used in sequence too, because you could put a lot of these together and increase the voltage significantly. But it existed, it was real. And so how do people discover the principles of a battery back then? You really have to, makes you wonder, because you wouldn't create a battery by accident. You had to have some understanding of the flow of electricity. Where did that come from? How did they know that? It's a mystery.
My name's Nick. I'm the owner of Kevlar Joe's, and I'm the roaster. I'm an Air Force Security Forces veteran, a dad to three wild boys, and a husband to my wife, Crystal, and a coffee enthusiast. From a family in a small town in Missouri, we started with the simple idea of crafting a perfectly bold cup of coffee. Inspired by wellness and countless pots of stale coffee while deployed, we wanted to craft a bold, clean, and smooth coffee. So we did. And we realized we wanted to share this coffee with our friends. Lord knows we could all use a good cup of coffee right about now. From the farm to your coffee cup, there's nothing like a good, well-crafted, and bold cup of coffee. No matter what time of the day, it's there to pick you up, motivate you, and relax you. We hope you enjoy our coffee. Be bold, be humble, be Kevlar. And you can find Kevlar Joe's Coffee Company anytime you want at www.kevlarjoe.com. Enjoy.
Hey, what's happening? What's up? Hold out that glass because we're going to fill it up. Welcome to the Prometheus Lens Podcast, the place where the conversations are always enlightening. I just want you to know, I appreciate if you're seeing this. You obviously watch my content. You enjoy my content. So please like, comment, share, subscribe. And if you are not already a member of the All Access Pass, I encourage you to go over and sign up. It's quick, it's easy, it contributes to the show, helps me to produce the content that you enjoy, and you get all kinds of great perks. You get 48-hour early access to all episodes, members-only episodes, you get membership to the private community, and then you also get monthly chats, and then you get also monthly Q&As with authors and other great speakers. So come on over and join us on the hero's journey, guys.
In terms of how they knew enough to construct this battery, but it's there, it exists, it's 2,000 years old.
Now, I had read, if I remember correctly, they would put some kind of liquid in here to conduct electricity. Is that right or am I off?
Yeah, that would probably be the case. You'd probably have some type of electrolyte conductor in the battery, and then you have an anode and cathode, and that's how you make a battery. But the mystery to me is not the construction of it. It's how they understood enough about electricity to want to build one. I don't know. That's a mystery. Where did they get that knowledge?
And with me, one thing I always like to look at is common themes. You know, if you see something in various cultures, various myths throughout different times and throughout the world, there has to be something to this. You know, like in Mesopotamia, you were mentioning that, and that was the area where this was found. You know, you had the Oannes myths and the seven Apkallu sages that came through and gave wisdom and knowledge to mankind. And then the same area, you know, with the Hebrews and the Israelites, they had the Genesis 6 narrative that the fallen angels came down, bred with the daughters of men and gave technology. And you go on the other side of the world, you have in Peru, you have Viracocha. And same thing with him. He had these disciples that followed him, and he came and gave all this knowledge. And so it's just that's one thing that stands out to me when I see stuff like this. It's like there must be something to these stories. And even the Indians had the star people.
Yeah, where did they get the technology? Maybe they did. Maybe they got it from visitors to our planet. A definite possibility.
Yeah,
because I happen to believe that not only have aliens visited Earth in the recent past, but they've probably visited Earth for millions of years in the past to up to the present day. But their technology is so much more advanced than ours, it allows them to hide themselves with invisibility fields, which we're now starting to experiment with in the military. So, yeah, I think there were probably advanced aliens who assisted man or were involved in the construction of our early ancestors. So who knows? Okay, so this starts to get into really mysterious OOPAs. It's not a fake. It's a hammer with iron and wood found inside a rock. But that rock is estimated to be, let's see, what's the age on it? 400 to 500 million years old. Well, man obviously didn't exist then. Our archaeologists show that man and even our ancestors only existed back a few million years ago. And so it had to have been some type of civilization that existed back then that created this hammer. Were they giants? Were they predecessors of humanity? Some people think that maybe the dinosaurs had intelligent ancestors or intelligent line of beings that could create civilization. We'll get into that a little later in terms of an ancient civilization that might have existed from which you can tell from OOPAs. But this is a really fascinating mystery that nobody can really answer. All they can really say is, oh, it's a fake. Well, excuse me, if there were one or two items that we found in the world and that was it, maybe they could be fakes. But when you're talking many, many items found in different places and in rock strata, that's not a fake. Another thing to think about is that how long will the remains of our civilization last? It's estimated that within 1,000 years, of our civilization ending, most buildings would be destroyed. There might be a few dams left, but things would start to look pretty covered and broken up by plants and trees. Now, if you go 10,000 years or even 100,000 years, most of everything is going to be gone because of earthquakes, because of storms.
Entropy alone.
Yes. So what's going to exist millions of years from now from our civilization? Not much. And it's interesting that most of the OOPAs found in really ancient eras are from rock strata, either within coal or within limestone, things that can protect objects for millions and millions of years, because that's all that would be left of a civilization back then. There would be nothing else to find.
And that's one thing that a lot of people overlook, and when we're talking about certain things like this, is if it's encased in a rock like that, that means, you know, it's basically been fossilized. So that's why it's been preserved. It's like, you know, if my dog goes out and dies and lays in the field, you know, within a few years, it's going to, you know, just rot away. Scavengers are going to take it away. But if there was some cataclysm, you know, like, you know, the great deluge, you know, the great flood, or the 12,000 years ago, the Young Adrias, all these different, you know, worldwide catastrophic events, you know, that many cultures throughout time and history all record, that all this earth and volcanoes erupting, just mass, you know, devastation, for lack of a better word, would just throw up all this soot and just bury all this stuff just simultaneously. And for you to get a fossil, that's what it has to be. It has to be buried quickly, extreme heat, and just, you know, just basically freeze whatever that object is in time.
Right. Yeah, that's the only way things could be preserved like that. Some type of disaster, or maybe just a long period of time where the thing was not disturbed and got covered into by material that would later turn into rock. And there's one object that we're not talking about, and I wonder if I can find it, but there's a coal mine in Poland where an ancient wheel, actually, you can find it. Now, this is really fascinating. It's a little out of order what we discussed, but I thought it would be useful to bring it up. This is a perfect example of something that was captured in coal strata. It's actually a wheel. You can see the hub of it. You can see the spokes. You can see the outline of the outer rim of the wheel. It's not just a figment of our imaginations. It's a real wheel that was turned into coal and embedded in the side of this mine. And it's hundreds of millions of years old. And I actually found 10 objects that I wrote a whole book about in the same era of 300 million years old. The other one to look at is 4.1, because it's a mask. It's a mask of some being that existed then. The iron mask of a face, 300 million years old. And what do you see? Some type of being that could be a human, but the features are much blunter. Bigger nose, bigger lips. The eyes have a ridge. What type of being was that that existed back then? But from the OOPAs that I found in that age range, we were able to determine the basic structure of what that civilization was. For instance, that we know that they had mechanical parts. We know that they had the wheel. They were able to cast metals into bells. They had golden threads. They made tools. All sorts of things that show that they were a civilization, probably on the level of what you find back in Roman era times, but something that existed so far in the past that is considered impossible. Again, 300 million years ago. So who could have done this? Aliens, Maybe they came and started a civilization back then, or maybe they created a intelligent being that created a civilization back then, or maybe these were intelligent. Well, this is even before the era of the dinosaurs, but some type of animal that grew into intelligence and created civilization, created objects back then, well before mankind ever existed. And this group of 10 or so objects I found, which came from the same era, all indicate that there was a civilization way back then, something that we don't know anything about in our past. We only know about it because of these objects that were found in rock strata, limestone or coal. And that's a fascinating thing to think about, that there's just parts of the history of our planet that are total mysteries to us, and things were going on our planet with intelligent life in an era we didn't even think there were more than some lizards on the land. But there must have been something that created these things.
Well, as far as the dating, Martin, do you think that some of these catastrophic events just, like, could have just disheveled everything so bad, like something that was originally, you know, 3 to 5 foot under the ground got threw up to the top layer and just got a small dusting covering, or even the opposite, just got shoved down even further. With me, when I look at some of these things, I am no doubt, I believe there was ancient lost civilizations, and that there's so much of this stuff that we can't get, you know, our heads around. But my only hang up, honestly, is just the dating of things. I don't trust carbon dating, because, like, you know, they'll test something and in a 6-inch radius, and they'll get, you know, hundreds of thousands of years sometimes differences, and they're all over the place. And the way that I understand, like, I mean, I'm a layman, and I look into some of this stuff lightly, but from my understanding, how they test this is they test C-14, and they know, you know, now how long it takes for a certain amount to deteriorate, you know, like the rate of deterioration.
The half-life.
Yeah. So what they do is they test something, and whatever the C-14 level is, they use their formula, and that's how they come up with their number. But to me, it's, you know, I'm thinking, yeah, I might breathe, you know, X amount of times a minute normally. But if somebody slaps me in the face, that number's probably going to double. So how can we be sure that this deterioration rate has been the same throughout history, and that when these catastrophic events happened, that it didn't affect that deterioration rate?
Well, that's a very good question. Fortunately, there are a lot of different types of dating that are done. First of all, carbon-14 dating is not the only type of half-life dating. There's also uranium, which is a billion years. And there's other materials that deteriorate at different rates. So you can use those to help measure the date of things that are way past carbon-14 in terms of age. The other thing is strata, rock strata. Geologists can determine different levels of rock strata and the age of those rock strata by things they find in it, different fossils or different things that were going on in the earth that they know then that created that rock strata, like meteor hitting the earth or different lava flows. And I'm not an expert either, but I know that these things are used to set guidelines in terms of when different things existed. So we know, for instance, coal is usually hundreds of millions of years old, because it was, according to the best theories, it was created from organic matter that was compressed and over a long period of time turned into coal. So the other thing you look at is the strata. Is the strata continuous, or is something damaged it and caused it to be all roughed up and into a position where the dates would be all messed up? But most of these strata are pretty stable. And they cover a large area. I'm talking hundreds of square miles. So it's something that's hard to fake. So I'm relying on different geologists and different scientists who say that different materials of different half-lives can exist in objects and determine their age. And that's getting more precise every day. In fact, even now, ice cores from the Arctic and the Antarctic are used to determine age, because you can match different historical events by the level of dust that you find in the ice at different levels. So there's a combination of different techniques that are used to determine the age of objects. And that's an excellent question, because how can you be sure of the age? When you look at multiple objects that were pulled from different strata, which have all been measured and the timing estimated by experts, and you see that there's a pattern from that, then you can say with pretty strong evidence that there really was something happening at that time.
Hey guys, what's up? Tom Dunn here from Through the Blast. We have launched our new ministry outreach, No More Dead Babies. And the website is nomoredeadbabies.com. We want you to go to that website and get a free t-shirt, okay? We want you to join the movement, okay? We need soldiers to step up and say that they're going to be a voice for the voiceless, okay? Guys, we've never done anything like this before. This is a big deal, and I don't know who all is ready for it out there, but it's time to step up, okay? And we're asking you to go to the website and order the shirt. The shirt is free, but you got to pay for shipping, okay? We're going to ship it out to you as soon as we get it. You tell us what size you need, and then we're going to send you the t-shirt, okay? Join us. The goal is to get thousands of these shirts out. Keep pushing this. I think this boldness can be contagious.
And see, that's another thing, too, with that strata. Yeah, you can definitely see examples where, you know, the sedimentary has been laid down and layers and things like that. But then, just like these out-of-place artifacts, sometimes you have these anomalies that just throws a wrench in what you think and see. Because, you know, I'm sure you've seen them, but there's been pictures of digs and stuff where there's all these different layer of strata, but then there's a standing tree. Perfect. Just standing right, straight that it just got buried suddenly, you know. Mm-hmm. But yeah, if anybody tells you they got it all figured out, you better run. You know, if you're honest with yourself, we all have more questions than we have answers. But
what I always look for are patterns. If I can find a pattern that's consistent over a number of different data points, then I know I found a good anomaly that's worth focusing on. And that's the case with this 300 million year old civilization. But there are other patterns too. And if we get into talking about prophecy or stuff like that, I've had enough experiences to determine patterns within that. And so there's a lot of the subjects that you can learn things from are because of patterns that you see in the evidence.
Hmm. Well, let's see. We got the Iron Mask. Now we got human and dino prints together. Now, this is something I know that my listeners will be fascinated in. Actually, one of my friends, he guests on here a lot, Dr. Aaron Judkins. He's down there in Glen Rose, Texas, and he's always down there in those riverbeds finding all those prints and stuff.
Right. And here you can see a footprint in that picture, kind of upper left of center, over a dino print. And they're in rock strata. Well, that rock strata is millions of years old. According to the data in here, it was 100 million years old. So how did human footprints get into that picture? Well, that must say there was some type of being. And I don't know if it's exactly the same size as a footprint would be today or if it's a giant print. But that's saying that there was some being that was human-like that was around at the same time as the dinosaurs. Now, from our records, that couldn't be modern humans because we didn't exist until a couple million years ago, and Homo sapiens didn't exist until the last couple hundred thousand years. But something existed back then. Was it a time traveler? Was it an alien? Was there something else? I don't know.
And it appears that he was there before, because to me, it looks like the footprint was there first, and then the dino print went over top and overlapped. And I was counting the toes, too. I was trying to make sure there wasn't six toes there. Nephilim giant print.
There we go. Maybe, yeah. It could be that the dinosaur came after the human there. You can see how the print is squished in on one side by the claw.
Mm-hmm.
So that's possible. That's possible. And I've got some pictures of other human prints from that era. Now look at that. That was obviously a giant footprint.
Yeah.
Because a modern man standing with his heel in the same spot has a foot that's about half the length. And so I believe giants existed. I've written books on giants.
Definitely.
Maybe that's a good example of a giant footprint. And a good question to ask, sir, is how many toes were there?
Yeah.
Let's see. How many? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, possibly 6 toes.
Yeah.
I'm not quite sure from that. But a lot of the people who study giant skeletons say that they had 6 fingers and 6 toes.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. Maybe that's one of them.
And like you said, patterns and themes, that's something, because, you know, with the biblical narrative, you know, Goliath and a lot of these guys were described with 6 fingers and 6 toes. When you go to the North American lore, they all battled red-haired, 6-fingered giants. Uh-huh. And then in Peru, all these, you know, Paracas skulls and elongated skulls they find, the majority of them have red hair. You know, there's a lot of themes with, what do they call it, pterodactyly and red hair.
Some people think there were giants as tall as 36 feet high. I mean, that's ridiculous. Mm. But that's what they claim. Goliath, from the Bible evidence, was probably around 11 foot 6.
Yeah. I got a copy of that book.
Okay. And there's other evidence of giants showing that they were huge. Is that possible? I don't know. But it also lends itself to a lot of food for thought about different beings that existed on this planet when we did. So maybe that footprint we looked at earlier that was twice the length of a normal human footprint, maybe that was one of those 20-foot-tall giants, so dinosaurs weren't that big for it. Maybe it was more a comparison of a man to a horse or something.
Yeah.
I don't know.
And what's cool, too, is like when you look, you know, for us, that just seems just unreal, you know. Mm-hmm. But when you look at the fossil record, when you look at like pre-flood, you know, pre-fauna versus now, I mean, it's astronomically different, but it's the same species. Like, I can't remember the name of that website. There's a website you can go to, and they put them side by side. You can look at an ancient eagle skull, and this thing is this big. And then you look at a modern one, it's this big.
Yeah.
You know, a pre-flood tortoise shell, that thing is, you know, big as a car or better, and then it shows a modern one. And just all these different things.
Genesis, it says giants lived in the earth in that, back in Genesis.
Yeah. And that's the thing, when you go back and look through that, it's like the pre-flood world of that time, it's like it was just a different place. You know, everything was bigger, badder, stronger. And you can even see that in the fossil record. So, these big astronomically tall men, you know, is not out of that realm, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's another question of high interest.
Mm. Definitely. And then you talked about the dinosaurs too. A lot of things people look over, it was the Inca stones.
Oh yeah.
They're depicted riding them like horses, doing battle on them and leashing them and pulling them around like pet horses and stuff.
Well, I do have to say there's some question about the legitimacy of those stones. Mm. But what you're talking about may be something that actually happened with the predecessors of humanity. I don't know. There are some fakes out there. But there's a lot more that are not fakes, that are just things that don't fit the models that our scientists, archaeologists, and anthropologists say they should. So they try to ignore that evidence. Of course, a lot of people claim that there were many giant skeletons found in the last couple of centuries in the U.S. and that they've been hidden. They claim the Smithsonian Institute hid or destroyed a lot of those. I don't know that. I don't know the answer to that. But there's been enough evidence of giants found over the last couple of centuries in North America, you have to say something really existed back then. And, of course, there's a famous story of Indians in, I think it was Arizona.
Yeah, Lovelock Caves.
Yes, that fought a war with giants and killed them in Lovelock Cave because they were attacking people and eating people and they wanted to get rid of them. So that's an ancient Indian story that might actually be true.
Yeah, and I can give you two instances, and I'll tell you these, and these are from personal experience. Giants is a big fascination of mine, and I have a lot of friends that are in this circle that investigate this stuff. And are you familiar with L.A. Marzulli?
I've heard the name.
See, me and him become friends over the years, and I've had him on the show a lot. I had him in an interview, and he went to those islands down there, Catalina in California.
Oh, yeah. I lived in Los Angeles. I used to go to Catalina all the time.
Well, see, they allowed him to go through the storage area and go through, you know, like pictures and different documents because he was doing a documentary. And he was going through there, and he found a picture of this guy, some famous archaeologist. I think he might have been like, you know, one of the founders or something of that museum. He was associated with it somehow. But he said that the picture he saw, he said the guy was like leaning on a shovel and there was a hole underneath him that they had dug out. And there was a body, a skeleton laying there in the fetal position. Mm-hmm. And he said, you know, just laying in a crate back there for God knows how long. He said, well, I got it out and got to examine it. And he said, I was like, man, that's a huge skeleton. So he took a bunch of pictures of it with his phone and sent it to like some kind of, you know, photography people. And they stretched the thing out, took it and just stretched it out to see how tall it was. And it was like 9.5, 10 feet tall.
Wow.
And then when he got to looking through, he found some more pictures of that same skeleton. It was like a close up of its face and its hands because it was laying like this, had six fingers.
So we actually found some skeletons. That's really cool.
So he,
because the claim was a lot of those skeletons never existed, that the guy who dug them up he was just faking everything. So if there's really evidence, that's really cool.
And he took it to the curator of the museum and showed them, and they were like, oh yeah, we didn't realize, you know, and all this stuff. So he said that he went back like a few months later and they had that picture of him leaning on the shovel on display in the museum. And he was like, cool, they're embracing this. He said, then I get to look and he said, they photoshopped the giant skeleton out of the shot.
There's also stories of modern giants. Do you know the story of the giant of Kandahar in Afghanistan?
Yeah. L.A. Marzulli is the one that broke that story.
Oh, he did.
Yes. That was L.A. Yeah. That was wild.
Cause that's a story of, some special forces who ran into a giant that killed one of them with a spear and they shot it to death. And then they took it away in a helicopter and it's gone. Nobody knows where it is.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
It's just wild.
Maybe because it's evidence of aliens they don't want found. I don't know.
In the very least, it is, in my opinion, it's contradictory to evolution. Because it shows you that, you know, everything bigger, badder, stronger back then. And it's like, if there were giants back then this tall, it shows that we are de-evolving instead of, you know, evolving. It's completely backwards. And they'd have to change their textbooks and rewrite everything.
That could be. Now, this is a really interesting one. The age is kind of uncertain, but it's an actual plug with three prongs embedded in a rock. I mean, it's not glued into a hole. It's part of the rock. How did that get there, and how old is it? There's some x-rays of the prongs, too, so you can see some of the structure of them.
Oh, yeah.
But it could be millions of years old. So was there somebody dealing with electricity back then, doing things that were electrical? And this is maybe all that's left of evidence of that? I don't know. I mean, these are a huge number of mysteries that people have found that just don't match what we're told by archaeologists of how things should be. And you can't just ignore all of them. So actually, this book brings together all of the anomalies I could find like that. I left out a lot of footprint stuff. Oh, there is another one I wanted to show too. So these are wheel ruts, obviously created by some type of cart. There's only one problem. They seem to be in rock that's 12 to 14 million years old.
Yeah.
How can that be? That's impossible. No humans lived back then. But something did. Something had a cart that created those wheel ruts. Are you going to try and tell me that there's something else besides a wheel rut? I don't think so. I mean, it's got the right spacing for a wheel rut. Just another anomaly that exists out there that most people would like to ignore.
Which I've heard of that, but I've never actually really looked into it. And now that I'm here, I want to zoom in. I was about to ask you a question, but I was like, I can try to see myself. Is there any chisel marks in these, or is it just smooth as can be?
Well, I don't know. I haven't been there. But if you look at the pictures, I don't see any chisel marks in the pictures.
Yeah.
So I don't know. But, you know, you're asking good questions about are there ways these things can be faked? And I suppose with enough effort, you could fake things. You could use drills and then smooth things out, and you could make a fake set of tracks that way.
Why go through all that time? That's my question. Why go through all that time to do that?
Why go to all the effort to do that? I mean, it's not worth it. The benefit of doing that would not be worth it. And that's the same thing with a lot of these objects. The time it would take to fake them is a lot more than it's worth to somebody. I mean, you want to make a fake object and get people to believe in it? Okay. And I know that was tried with a giant back in the 19th century. I'm trying to remember the name of it. Piltdown Man or something?
Oh, yeah, Piltdown Man. Yeah, and Lucy.
Near the baseball museum in Cooperstown. And it was turned out to be a fake. I guess they put it in a circus and ran it around a while, so it made worthwhile because people paid money to see it. But it's just not worth it to make a lot of these objects from scratch yourself, even if you could do it. The dating on a lot of these objects also would give the lie to a fake. So another one of those anomalies.
Yeah.
So trying to open up people's minds about how little we really know about our past, even though we think we do. And it's interesting, if you look at archaeology, more and more archaeology is going back into the past further and further and finding things that are considered impossible. Just recently, I did a whole book on pyramids, and there's a pyramid in Indonesia that's been found. It's been dated by reputable archaeologists to almost 30,000 years ago. Well, nobody was supposed to be building pyramids more than like 4,000 or 5,000 years ago. So how did that happen? Well, just shows we know so little about ruins on our planet and things that were created a lot longer ago than we think. Another example I would use, you've probably heard of this, in former Yugoslavia, the Bosnian pyramids. You've heard of the Bosnian pyramids? Mm. And that's a pyramid-shaped hill. It looks like a pyramid, and they've done a lot of digging into it around the sides and found lots of rock, which seems to be some type of concrete. And this place dates almost to 30,000 years also. So these are probably early humans back then that they were building things back then. And it's not accepted. It's not accepted that it's real. So let's ignore it. But there's a lot of these anomalies out there. Right now, I'm doing a book actually about underwater ruins from previous civilizations. Because if you look at the last ice age, the water table was about 360 feet lower than it is today. And since most civilizations were built on the coasts of different locations, you've got to figure that there's many cities and settlements that were inundated by water over the centuries. And though some of those are being found, but there's still more being found every day. So it shows, just shows as we explore our world and we have the tools to find things we couldn't look at before, like scuba equipment, which was only developed in the last 100 years to go do underwater archaeology. There's a lot more anomalies out there that exist that we really didn't know anything about.
Yeah. And I like too now that they're starting to broaden their horizons a little bit and entertain new ideas, at least starting to, because now there's this big expansion thanks to people like, you know, Graham Hancock and things like that, looking into astro archaeology, and that they're finding out that a lot of these ancient sites, you know, it's the on earth as it is in heaven mirrored image stuff. You know, they've now discovered that the Sphinx, you know, was originally, you know, a lion, and it was looking toward the what was it, the summer solstice, I think it was, or the equinox, one of the two, but it was facing directly where the sun would rise at that time. And then the Nile was a mirrored image of the Milky Way. And then the three pyramids were Orion's belt. So they, you know, now that we have all this technology and we can rewind the hands of time and see when that image was right above Egypt and put dates and stuff on it. And it was like a 14 or 15 year old kid in Canada that done that very same thing in the Amazon. And they ended up finding all kinds of ancient temples and pyramids and stuff that lined up to stars and constellations in the middle of the jungle.
And there's still a lot of those jungles that are just being found. Like in Brazil, they just found a city using LIDAR, a type of radar, under the jungle covers, which maybe had hundreds of thousands of people living in it, and it's never been seen before. There's a lot of those anomalies. In fact, one that comes to mind, I wrote a whole book about it. I'm here in Dallas, Texas now. I moved here about 14 months ago from Los Angeles. And in the northeast part of Dallas is a town called Rock Wall. Have you ever heard of it?
Yeah, I had heard of it, yes.
Rock Wall, the name comes from an underground wall. It was found like 160 years ago, and a lot of excavations have been done of it. There's like six or seven different outcroppings spread around the area that have like a 10-mile perimeter, and nobody knows who built it. There was a, they had a lot of pictures of the excavations in the museum I went to there, and they even had a section of the wall that they transported and put next to the museum, and I got to go up close and examine the stones there. And the stones are about 3 or 4 feet long and about a foot square. And you can tell they were intelligently crafted stones. They're not just, I don't think I have it in this book. I've got it in the other books. But it really shows evidence of a wall, and we don't know who built it. We don't know how old it is because there's nothing to really date it. Some other giant relics were found in the area, so maybe giants created. We don't know. It could be many thousands of years old. It's one of those mysteries. And most people don't know anything about it. I often ask people I meet here in Dallas, do you know about Rock Wall? Okay, it's a town. Do you know how where the name came from? They have no idea. So it's something, there's always a lot of anomalies around that people don't know about. And fortunately, they're getting explored. We're learning more all the time.
Well, if you're in Dallas, me and my buddies that I do my other podcast with, we got invited to go to a conference down there in Dallas the weekend of the eclipse. It's April 5th through the 8th.
Yeah.
Here the Watchman is doing a conference in Dallas down there, and they invited us to come. So we're going to have a vendor's table and stuff. You should come up and hang out.
Yeah, that would be great. I'd love to do that.
Yeah, I think if you wait till the, it's either February 15th or 16th, and you go to their website, they give our listeners a promo code. So here's a shameless plug to everybody listening. Use the code DIGBIBLE, one word. And you get $20 off in-person tickets or $10 off the streaming ticket.
Yeah, if we can send me a link to some of that stuff, I'll definitely try and go.
Yeah. Well, Martin, thank you so much, man. And hopefully this is the first of many conversations. How many?
Well, thank you. I enjoyed it. I always enjoy talking about these things.
And how many artifacts are in this particular book that you've covered exactly? Do you remember or recall?
I found over 50. I've added more since then. It's getting close to 60. But these are legitimate artifacts from all different time periods. And once you read these, if you haven't seen this type of thing before, it'll really blow your mind. You'll say to yourself, current archaeology is missing a lot. And these things really do exist. And we should open our minds to the possibilities of alternative histories and things about history we don't know that have gone on our planet.
Oh, yes, definitely. Well, before we go, Martin, just for those maybe it just missed the opening, let them know who you are, your website, and where they can find your books and material.
Okay, thank you. Again, my website is mketingtonbooks.com, spelled mketingtonbooks.com. I'm a retired engineer, and I've also done a lot of spiritual exploration through my meditation over, 50 years now. Meditation and exploration of consciousness and experiences I've had. So I cover topics which are listed on my homepage of all different types, of the paranormal, which I got into because I was trying to explain a lot of my premonitions and prophecies that I had, and legendary beings, Bigfoot and other things like that. Ancient history, of course, spirituality, strange and science, time and dimensions. I've got a lot of theories due to my experience and other evidence I've collected about how time works and how dimensions actually work. And they have a lot of commonality with other subjects. All of these out-of-the-box topics are in books from my website, and I have them in different formats, ebooks, printed books, and audiobooks. I try and do audiobooks for all my books. And that's my thing. That's my focus. So thanks for having me.
I appreciate you coming on, talking to us, and definitely time traveling, dimensions, that would be a discussion that I'd love to have too in the future.
Okay. Yeah, we could do that. I'd like to do that with you. Thank you, Justin.
I appreciate it. Hey guys, thanks for tuning in. Be sure to hit that like button, subscribe button, share button. Help us to grow the show. Let your friends and family know about us, and let's expand some paradigms. But until next time, torches high, guys. Hey guys, what's happening? Hey, if you enjoyed that episode, please take a minute to hit that like button, hit that subscribe button if you haven't already, and share us with some friends and family. It just takes a second to share on social media, you know, Facebook or a text message or email one of your friends. It helps us to grow the show. I greatly appreciate it because there's many ways you can contribute to a podcast that you enjoy. You know, of course, you can contribute financially. That's great. But if you can't, those are other great ways that you can support the podcast that you love and listen to every single week. And I appreciate you guys. Torches high.